This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
In a world where everything, and I mean everything, went perfect for Vegas last season, in their inaugural season in the NHL, it looks like they'll already be missing their top defenseman for the first 20 games of the season. So very disappointing for Vegas fans and very, very disappointing for Nate Schmidt.
TSN hockey analyst Dave Poulin discussing the suspension handed down to Nate Schmidt.
No fooling with Poulin.
Yes, for a violation of the NHL's PED, performance-enhancing drug policy. He's gone for the first 20 games of the upcoming season after he was tested positive for what he says was a microscopic amount of the substance. They didn't actually release what the substance was. This was the first time since Jared Tenorti in 2016 that a player has been suspended for a PED violation. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by our good friends at Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. If you love Bernstein's as much as we do, show them some love. Leave them a 5-star review on TripAdvisor.
I've used a PED before. Performance-enhancing deli.
I was going to say Viagra.
I was thinking to myself, I'm like, he's going somewhere with
Cialis
this.
Cialis or Viagra?
I'm thinking to myself, just wait for it, folks. Just wait, as he's got something.
Yeah.
He's got something cooking.
Performance-enhancing deli. That was very clever there, young man. So, you know, Nate Schmidt dinged the 20 games. I didn't do it. I can't believe it got into my system.
That was a pretty aggressive defense that he put out. I think there were three separate statements that you know, pretty clearly, with expert testimony stating that he in fact...
Yes, the line is that he likened it to a drop of salt, a pinch of salt in an Olympic-sized swimming pool.
That's not a lot of salt.
It's not a lot of salt.
It's still a freshwater pool.
But, I mean, that implies... I mean, here's my problem with that quote. I mean, if he had taken it weeks, maybe the testing happened, if the testing had happened a month earlier, maybe they find that he has more than just a pinch of salt in an Olympic-sized swimming pool full of PEDs in his body. Maybe it was just that he was at the end of a cycle of PEDs, and that's what was left in his system when the testing happened. I don't know. I have no idea if he did it, or if it's a false positive, or if he's getting screwed by whatever system happened here.
Well,
or
it wasn't
he...
a false positive, Drew. I mean, they...
He
tested positive, yeah. And it was trace amounts, but the reality is those trace amounts are illegal according to the World Anti-Doping Agency, their policies, and that's mm-hmm. what the NHL abides by.
Yeah, and he says he's never taken a supplement, anything other than what is approved by the team, and that certainly might be the case, and perhaps he's, you know, the supplement he took happened to be tainted for whatever reason with a PED. I don't know. I'm a little cynical on this one, I'll say, and say that nobody's ever come out and said, yeah, I did it because I wanted to make myself better and get a big payday. Maybe Nate Schmidt is the unfortunate victim of circumstances here, but I'm a little cynical when it comes to that.
My problem with this, Drew, is I think the punishment should fit the crime.
And you don't think the punishment is sufficient? Or
I guess I should say the crime should fit the punishment.
So you think the punishment is too heavy?
I think 20 games is a lot.
Well,
that's a quarter of a season. The Vegas Golden Knights are not going to have Nate Schmidt. And it's really unfortunate for Nate Schmidt. He's coming off of a career year. I mean, he goes all the way to the Stanley Cup final. Nate Schmidt was a third-pairing defenseman. Mm-hmm. He spent a little bit of time as a second-pairing defenseman in Washington. But let's be honest, he was a third-pairing defenseman.
Yeah,
I really like Nate Schmidt's game, by the way.
So do I.
I mean, he can move the puck. You know, he's got a physical element to his game.
He's a perfect defenseman for this day and age in the NHL because he can move the puck and he can skate.
Absolutely. He's a talented player.
Yeah.
So it's really unfortunate for Schmidt because, you know, he comes off of the career year, the Golden Knights. We know they had that, you know, Cinderella run to the Stanley Cup final. Unfortunately, they knocked the Jets out. And now Schmidt's going to miss a quarter of the season. And the Golden Knights now still haven't signed Shea Theodore, even though Shea Theodore you expect to be in training camp. You expect him to be signed. We have no idea, but, mm-hmm. I mean, there's no reason to believe that he won't be signed at some point in the next week or two.
But any team that loses their top defenseman or one of their top defensemen is going for 20 games is going to hurt them.
It's going to hurt them, and you wonder, you know, are they going to make a trade now, or are they just going to say, okay, well, you know what, we're going to wait it out here.
But hang on, you said that you don't think the punishment fits the crime. Why?
I mean, when you're talking about trace, it's not like they found that this guy was, you know, doing, you know, steroids every day.
Well, we don't know.
But it's amounts. It's a small amount of a substance. So to me, that means...
It's a small amount when he was tested. Who knows how long it had been in his bloodstream for? Who knows how long it had been in his system for? Like I said, maybe if he was at the end of a cycle, a PED cycle, and I'm not saying he was because I have no idea. But I'm saying I understand why it's a
black... We should get Dick Pound on the show.
I understand why it's a black and white issue when it comes to having PEDs in your system. You don't test a guy 365 days a year. You test him at various times. I think you can be tested up to 3 or 4 times in the course of the season. And it so happened that he got tested and he had something in his system. And whether it was there accidentally or whether it was there intentionally, I couldn't tell you. But I understand. Boom, it's in your system. Whatever reason, maybe it's an environmental reaction to something, whatever it might be, there's no gray area, and so he's gone for 20 games. And I understand that, unless you're going to do testing 365 days a year.
Sure, I agree with you on that one, Drew, but to my knowledge, Nate Schmidt has never violated the performance-enhancing drug policy. This is his first offense. So for me, 20 games for a first offense is pretty harsh.
It's well documented. This isn't agreed upon. This isn't the NHL imposing it without the NHLPA's input. This is an agreed upon deal between the NHL and the NHLPA. So I don't necessarily feel bad. I understand why he might be upset about it, but I don't necessarily feel bad for Nate Schmidt.
I didn't say I feel bad for him. I mean, he has to know what he's putting into his body. I'm just saying it's a little bit harsh when you consider that a hit to the head, a cross check to the head gets you 2 or 3 games. Why hasn't Austin Watson been suspended yet?
Well, I think that's coming, is my understanding. Bill Daly came out earlier. Austin Watson, Nashville Predators forward, was arrested for a domestic violence incident in the offseason. My understanding is from, I think Bill Daly came out this week and said, a punishment is shortly to be handed out to Austin Watson related to that.
Shouldn't that have happened already by the team or the NHL? I mean, 20 games to me, just relatively speaking, when you compare this suspension to other suspensions. I mentioned it hits to the head, hits from behind. I mean, I would be much more comfortable with 5 games, 10 games, but 20. I mean, he's going to miss a quarter of the season, and I get it. I mean, you have to know, like I said, what you're putting in your body. Whatever the substance was, I don't know. I'm not a chemist.
They never came out and said what the performance-enhancing drug specifically was.
But he has to be responsible for his actions. That's all I'm saying. I mean, you know, maybe we throw it out to Twitter, and maybe, you know, I'm in the minority here, but I just think 20 games is a lot.
I think 20 games is a lot when you put it in context with how other suspensions are dealt with, including hits to the head and things of that nature. And it'll look bad for the NHL probably if Austin Watson is only suspended for 5 games or 10 games after a domestic violence incident. They'll look really bad for the NHL. And I get your point on that matter, Ezzy, but I think you have to look at every situation almost in a vacuum. And this has been negotiated. It's a labor negotiation, and this is what the punishment is dictated to be.
To your point, Drew, earlier, when you're talking about trace elements and when he, you know, maybe he was coming off, the question I would have is at what point did they last test him to the test that actually determined that there was something in his system? And if those were in fairly close proximity, then there's probably a likelihood that he didn't, you know, maybe it was just a trace of, you know, something got corrupted and it triggered that result. But like as he said, none of us are chemists, and none of us know exactly the tests that are used to determine what type of, you know, drugs are in these guys' systems. So the fact is that, like you said, that this is something that has been it's negotiated between the two sides. So players know that you have to be aware of what's going on in your body at all times, and it's unfortunate, but it's just the reality of the game. Now, am I with Ez in this one? Like, especially again, based on the amount. Now, maybe again, I would feel differently if they had tested him, you know, a year earlier or 6 months earlier, and then at that point when they tested him, there was only a trace amount. Well, sure, you could say, like you said, to your point,
cycle on, cycle off.
Right. Then it makes a little more sense. But I guess my feeling is, and what would mitigate the suspension to me would be that if it had been, like I said, the proximity with which they did the test, and that would perhaps, adjust the way they did it. But again, this is a neutral arbitrator who made the ruling and who denied his appeal. So the fact of the matter is that, you know, there's obviously something that they were privy to that they saw that said this guy is guilty of this crime. So, I mean, again, It sucks. It's unfortunate the Golden Knights are going to lose a player for 20 games, but the reality is that that's the suspension that he merited from, you know, taking the substance.
Let me ask you guys this question. It's the fifth performance-enhancing drug suspension since 2013. First since Jared Tenorti, like I mentioned, since 2016. Do you think that is because the NHL doesn't have a performance-enhancing drug problem, or because the NHL's drug testing is very lax and allows players to work around it?
I would say the former.
So you don't think there's a drug problem?
There's nothing to indicate that there is a performance-enhancing drug problem in the NHL. At least I'm not aware of it.
Well, I mean, if you believe that there's only been five people caught in the last 5 years, then I would agree, you know, you're right. You would say it's not a problem. Dave, do you fall on one side or the other?
No, because unfortunately, I don't have enough information to give you a credible answer, unfortunately, Drew. So, I mean, again, there have only been five instances, like you suggested. So that would indicate that there isn't anything. And then, look, we know that these guys, you know, you see what Mark Scheifele, the whole article in GQ about, you know, the awareness of what these guys put into their bodies and the fact that they all have their own, you know, personal chefs, and they have the diets and the supplement plans.
Yeah, I think they all sleep in hyperbaric chambers or whatever it might be.
So we know that my inclination would be, without having any tremendous insight to this, would be that guys are just training in a much better manner, and that's the reason why everybody's in much better shape. So I would be likely to fall on the side of not. But, I mean, again, I don't know one way or another.
And is this not proof that the NHL's performance-enhancing drug policy is working because Nate Schmidt was caught?
Well, Nate,
right, that's proof that I'm not saying that they haven't missed other players, but yeah. I mean, I think this is in the very least, it's proof that players do get caught.
Players do get caught, or Nate Schmidt did get caught. I'm a cynic, a little bit by nature. I would be shocked if Nate Schmidt is the only player in the NHL that used performance enhancing drugs recently, and that only five guys have used it in 5 years. Doesn't sound logical to my cynical eye. I have no idea. That's my own personal opinion. I have no... It's just my knowing what I know about sports and society in today's day and age, I have trouble believing that more guys aren't using it and getting away with it.
I'd like to know what the substance is. I think it's probably to do with a supplement.
Well, that's what he said, is that, you know, he only takes supplements that are authorized by the team.
Right.
He gets them from the team, and one of those supplements that he took was contaminated,
well,
or whatever it might be.
I mean, but why haven't other players on the Golden Knights then also tested positive?
That's
right?
A very good question. You think that they would if the team is issuing the supplement. I don't know. To me, whatever it might be, the only thing we know for sure is that Nate Schmidt isn't going to play the first 20 games for the Vegas Golden Knights, and that's going to significantly impact them in their quest to repeat as Western Conference champions. When we come back, there are seven teams in the NHL without a captain. We talk about that. Is it an issue? Is it overblown? That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
The Islanders, one of seven teams this year, entering the season without a guy wearing the C on the sweater, joining the Coyotes, Sabres, Rangers, Maple Leafs, Canucks, and Golden Knights. So, Billy, let's start with the Islanders. Is this a team that needs to name a captain, do you think, coming into this year?
A little captaincy discussion, courtesy of our friends at NHL Network. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 10 minutes before the top of the hour on this Saturday morning. Just a quick note, we're going to be down at the Iceplex next Saturday as part of the Jets Fan Fest, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on location.
Are we going to be on the ice?
I doubt we're playing. I'd like to point out that you are currently eating a banana loaf on air, which
after spending the first hour complaining about needing to lose weight.
Yes,
that's his second banana loaf.
Yeah, shoveling some banana loaf into your mouth. That's very good. It always makes radio sound better. But in any event, we're going to be down at the Iceplex next Saturday as part of Jets Fan Fest. So if you ever wanted to see what we actually look like in person, try not to scream and run away in horror, you know, when you see us. You know, you can come down to the Iceplex next Saturday.
These live remotes are fun.
They are fun.
We don't do them that often, but, you know, we do it same. Vatel. We've done it. We actually did
CF Polo Park.
We did one at the Gold Eye Stadium.
Oh, that was way back when.
That was way back in the day.
Yeah, that was when a young Paulie Edmonds was the Goldeyes broadcaster. He wasn't yet a member of our family here at TSN 1290.
Didn't Drew actually get hit by a foul ball accidentally?
Well, actually, we were aiming.
On me. Yeah, you were aiming at me
like,
to hit me
with
a ball. We
knocked Drew out.
Yeah. Well, how could we get Drew to just fall asleep on air? It's why concussing him with a foul ball. That was nice of you guys. Good friends of mine. Captaincy vacancies throughout the NHL.
Yep.
Is this a thing that, you know, it used to be every team had a captain, and the captain was your first quote in the locker room. That's how it is here. The Blake Wheeler is the undoubted leader or an unquestioned leader of the team alongside Scheifele and Byfuglien to some extent and everything else. I mean, is this a thing that teams need, or is this like we heard in the first hour when we were talking to Dave McCarthy and Kyle Dubas and his conversations with TSN, senior hockey analyst Bob McKenzie, senior hockey insider? It's just a thing that's maybe a little passe in this day and age.
No, I mean, why else would teams still have captains then? If it was passe, I mean, I think when you're talking about, you know, certain teams, and you could throw the Toronto Maple Leafs in there, maybe you could throw the New York Islanders in there, maybe. Obviously, John Tavares was their captain. Now they don't have a captain. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Drew off the top. Seven teams don't have a captain. Now, when I look at those seven teams, I think there are some teams where, you know, there's an obvious choice for captain, and then there are other teams where there isn't an obvious choice. When you're talking about the Arizona Coyotes, it's Oliver Ekman-Larsson.
Yeah. Well, he made the huge commitment to the team to be there long term.
Right.
Signed the contract extension. Shane Doan has retired.
Right. So, I mean, Ekman-Larsson, I mean, will probably be the captain. I would put money down, if I had money, on Oliver Ekman-Larsson being the captain. Now, I think when you're talking about the Leafs, for me, I see it being a little bit tricky there with Austin Matthews and John Tavares. It's obviously going to be one of those two players. I can see the argument for Austin Matthews. He's going to be the face of your franchise for the next 15 to 20 years. Mm-hmm. But John Tavares right now, I mean, he's proven himself as a leader. Sure, the Islanders haven't had the playoff success, but he's had a lot of success at the international level. And obviously, personally, he's had a lot of success. Now, when you're talking about, we mentioned the Islanders, I have no idea. I mean, who's the captain going to be there? Nick Leddy? It's not going to be Matt Barzal. I mean, he's too young to be the captain, so there's no obvious captain there. When you're talking about the New York Rangers.
So when there's no obvious captain.
That's when I see, you know, going with the kind of leadership by committee. So whether you're talking about
the Islanders. A rotating cast of people wearing the A
right,
on their jersey.
Right, so you're going to have, you know, Patrick Marleau as an A next year. You're going to have.
In Toronto.
Right, yeah. Austin Matthews, John Tavares, I mean, Morgan Riley.
Yeah, maybe a guy like Ron Hainsey. Who's been through the wars.
Right, same thing goes for the New York Rangers. I mean, the New York Rangers, whether you want to call it a rebuild or not, I mean, they're not a Stanley Cup contender anymore. Now, who's the obvious choice there? I mean, I would probably say Matt Zuccarello or Mark Stahl because those two guys were the A's last year, right? Ryan McDonough, of course, traded before the trade deadline. Mm-hmm. So they need a captain. But I could easily see them going with, you know, the leadership by committee. You have, you know, three or four guys as your assistant alternate captain. So I think there are some teams that make more sense than others. And what about the Montreal Canadiens? I mean, well, they're not even thrown in there, but they might need a captain.
I was going to say, well,
in the near future.
So we know the Canadiens have been a gong show all summer, and their situation with Max Pacioretty continues to be just tortured. And I mean, he's still a member of the team, but they don't want him to be a member of the team. It's just an absolute disaster. He's the captain of the team. Training camp starts next week. I mean, can the Habs, who it's, right now it appears as though they're going to start at least training camp with Max Pacioretty, can they keep the captaincy on him when they've made it so clear that they don't want him as a member of their team anymore?
You can't strip him of his captaincy.
Why not?
No, you can't. I mean, first of all, because the players would revolt.
Forget the fact that is just extremely degrading.
Well, they've already said that we don't want you here anymore.
Remember, Drew, that's the management. That's not the coaching staff. That's not the players that are around him. So the reality is, while he's there, I mean, the truth is, what player is going to say, okay, sure, you're going to take it off of him? I'm going to take it? How awkward is that going to be if you're the captain beside a guy who's...
I'm not saying that they necessarily have to hand it out to somebody else. How do you start the year with him? I mean,
I'm with Ez. I don't think you can strip him of the captaincy. I say you can trade a captain. I don't think there's a problem with that. But you can't strip a guy of being the captain of the team.
To me, it's just such an odd situation to keep it on him if, given everything that's happened this summer.
You know, Drew, another team quickly that I wanted to mention here where there's an obvious choice for captain is the Sabres.
Jack Eichel.
Exactly. I mean, it's a no-brainer. So for me, you name Jack Eichel, you know, if you're Phil Housley, Jason Botterill, he's your captain right now. I mean, Jack Eichel, you know, he starts his long-term contract this year, making $10 million a year. I mean, he's the face of your franchise. He's your captain. I mean, there's no debate there. But when you're talking about, you know, we mentioned the Rangers, the Islanders, I'd throw in the Golden Knights there. I mean, the Golden Knights did not have a captain, and that would probably be the argument for why do you really need a captain, right? Sure. I see what you're saying, Drew, but I still think, you know, there are some things that are sacred in hockey. You got to have a captain. Well, or at the very least, you can't go 3 or 4 years without a captain.
How can it be? Well, I mean, the Leafs are, and how can it be sacred if a fifth of the teams don't even bother to do it anymore?
But we know that it's going to be Matthews or Tavares. I mean, come on, we know that. It's just a matter of time before one of those guys is the captain.
Well, I mean, I think if you're the Leafs, from their perspective, you're saying, well, why do we need one right now? You know, what's the purpose of going through this whole...
I think they want to make the right decision, that's why.
Is there a wrong decision between Matthews and Tavares?
No.
Assuming that Tavares fits into the dressing room like everyone expects that he would. I mean, is there a wrong decision? Are you maybe alienating the other guy by picking one over the other? Why not just keep going with the A's for, you know, for the future and the present time? If it ain't broke, why fix it?
No, I think the Leafs, well, Kyle Dubas has said the Leafs won't have a captain to start the season, but I'm just saying, you know, 2 or 3 years down the road, I don't see a captain not existing there.
Time will tell, won't it?
It's never happened in the history of the NHL where a team has gone, you know, 3 or 4 years without a captain.
Yeah.
So,
win the Stanley Cup, then every team will start copying them.
It's a copycat league, Dave. You know that. When we come back, Washington Capitals radio host Ben Raby joins us. We'll talk about the Stanley Cup champions. I think Ovechkin has sobered up from winning the cup, but I'm not 100% sure.
That's a team with a captain.
We talk to Ben up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number 3 of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. Producer James doing the great job behind the board. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Much like the NFL season starts with the Super Bowl champion playing at home, our regular season coverage in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts with an interview with last year's Stanley Cup champion, Ben Raby. The Washington Capitals radio host joins us on the line. Ben, good morning and thanks for joining us.
True, Dave, Ezra, good to be back.
It's our pleasure to have you with us, Ben. Now, obviously the first question has to be, have they stopped partying? Is Ovechkin in a fountain somewhere still? Like, you know, is the team going to be ready to hit the ice sober when training camp begins this week?
And Ben, did you do a keg stand as well?
I was going to say, first of all, encouraging, I think, the fact that here we are at the beginning of September, that the boys have come back to town. They've been on the ice the past week plus in high volume, high numbers. The guys returning maybe even a little earlier than they would have in years past. So I think they're starting to put last year behind them as much as they can, but no question, they had a good time this summer. I'm not sure if you guys saw the story earlier this week, actually. There were some rumblings, some suggestions that really they had quite a good time, that a few rules might have to be put in place down the line as far as just how many kickstands, if any at all, future champions are allowed to do. But look, we've had the conversation. These guys waited a long time, mm-hmm. as you guys know, especially the core of this team, and they were going to make the most of that opportunity to celebrate, and certainly they have, yes.
Certainly can't criticize them for that. So as we enter the 2018-19 training camp and the 2018-19 season, how do the Washington Capitals repeat the feat that they did last year? I don't know anybody had them necessarily as, you know, future Stanley Cup champions when the playoffs began, but the team obviously got on the roll. They got over the hurdle that was the Pittsburgh Penguins. Is this team poised to do the same this year, or you know, have they almost reached the peak and now they maybe are going to flatline a little bit?
Yeah, well, to your point, not only going into the postseason last year did folks not necessarily peg them as a favorite, even though they had won the division title. I agree with you. I was very much the same. I found last year's postseason run to be a pleasant surprise in the Washington, D.C. area, that of all the teams in the Alex Ovechkin era, for that to have been the club that eventually triumphed, I think it was surprising. It was a pleasant surprise and maybe made the run a little bit more special for those who were a part of it. That being said, as far as repeating or potentially putting themselves in position to repeat, very odd situation here. Obviously, the elephant in the room is the fact that there is a head coaching change, which I'm sure we'll get to. But the odd situation, which is odd in a good way, is just how much of last year's team they're returning. How often do we see Stanley Cup champions? They're up against the salary cap, perhaps. They're free agents to be cash in on a big postseason run. The Capitals are returning 11 of their top 12 forwards from a year ago, their top 7 defensemen, and their number one starting goalie in Braden Holtby. I mean, essentially what this team has lost player-wise from a year ago is fourth-line center Jay Beagle and a backup goalie in Philip Grubauer. Other than that, you're bringing back all the pieces, all the parts who were a part of that postseason run a year ago are back for another year, and some players took a little bit less money to put themselves in a position to return. Devontae Smith-Pelly comes to mind. They also re-signed Carlson, of course, and Michael Kempney on the back end. So the band is back together. So it'll be interesting to see how that works out, because it is a rarity to bring back that many players, of course, from a championship run. And then the big change, though, being behind the bench, Barry Trotz no longer here. But that being said, even in the promotion for Todd Reirden, a guy who's no stranger to these parts, he spent the past 4 years as Barry's top assistant.
No, Ben, one of the players that you didn't mention there who the Capitals re-signed is Tom Wilson, and I think he got a lot of criticism. You know, he signs the 6-year deal, and he's going to make himself, I think it's $5.1 million a year, or around $5.1 million a year AAV, and a lot of people were saying that's too much money, and they gave him too many years. But when you consider his age, 24 years old, and his production and the role that he plays on this team, do you think that criticism is fair?
I understand the criticism, because I would think over the past few years, Tom Wilson, going back to his rookie year when he came into the league as a fourth-line grinder who wasn't afraid to drop the mitts, of course, there's been a little bit of a reputation. I think it's an old narrative. I think it's a tired narrative by now, but there is that reputation that was developed years ago, earlier in his career, that he was a one-trick pony who can hit hard and fight, but what else can he do? He's come a long way over the course of his career, including last year. You know, he rode shotgun for most of the season with Ovechkin and either Backstrom or Kuznetsov, whoever was centering that top line. In other words, Tom Wilson has emerged as a top line right wing. That wasn't a cameo appearance he had there last year. He was put up on the top line in late November, which really coincided with the Capitals turning their season around in late November. Wilson was that top line right wing. It's a position we anticipate he will be holding on to for years to come here. And when you look at his annual salary of north of $5 million, maybe you associate it with Tom Wilson, you think, that sounds like a lot of money for him. You look around the league, $5 million for a top-line right wing to play alongside Ovechkin, Kuznetsov, it's probably in the neighborhood of what, you know, again, a top-line right wing in that sort of role ought to be, you know, penciled in for as the salary. And the other thing to keep in mind with Wilson is he hit career highs last year of 14 goals and 35 points. So, yeah, so we're not getting carried away here. He's not a 20-goal scorer just yet, not a 25-goal scorer just yet. But there's still even another level for his game to grow. And what I mean by that is his 14 goals last year and his 35 points, all even strength. He didn't see any power play time last year. And I think if you put his big body, he's going to be here for 5 years with, or sorry, 6 years with that contract extension. If you put that big body of his in front of the net on a power play, it potentially presents another opportunity where you could take advantage of his skill, his size, and that offensive potential. So I think there's still even another level for him to reach. So you take all that into consideration. And the fact, really, I know it's long-winded here, fellas, but the final thing I want to mention with Tom Wilson is the fact that he has brought something in Washington that, if you look earlier in the Alex Ovechkin era, was noticeably absent. There was a thought that the Capitals were maybe a little bit of an easy team to play against come postseason time. Tom Wilson certainly is not an easy guy to go up against. The size and physicality and that element of the game, that toughness that he brings, was lacking earlier this decade. And there was a reason they used a first-round pick on him back in 2012. And he has certainly, at least in these parts, lived up to the expectation.
You know, Ben, a lot of last year, you know, the Capitals took a lot of teams by surprise, as we've already touched on in, so far in this interview. But one thing, you know, when you're the Stanley Cup champions, is now you have a target on your back. How does that change this team's mentality going into this season, knowing that they're the team to beat?
Yeah, it's a good point. I think it's more you look around the division, you look around the conference, right? You look at Pittsburgh, who they eliminated last year in round two. I saw some of the quotes this week from Crosby and Malkin at the NHL media tour in Chicago. They're going to be hungry. The Columbus Blue Jackets, you don't think that stings for them from last year, blowing a 2-0 first-round lead against the eventual Stanley Cup champions? There are teams, you know, it's not only that the Capitals are going to be the hunted, but I look at some of those who are going to be doing the hunting, if you will. And, you know, there's certainly others within the Metropolitan Division. New Jersey's on the rise. And then, of course, you look at the Atlantic in the big three there in Toronto, Boston, and Tampa Bay. Again, Tampa Bay, another team that the Capitals left a sour taste in their mouths last spring. I think it'll be interesting to see how they handle being the hunted, just because I think the teams that will be doing the bulk of the hunting, if you will, certainly formidable, and I imagine there's going to be a lot of teams chomping at the bit to get back. You know, in the case of the Penguins, what they once had, and others who are looking to get there for the first time.
Ben Raby is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Ben is the Washington Capitals radio host, talking about the defending Stanley Cup champions as we commence the 18-19 hockey season. Ben, you mentioned Todd Reirden; he's the new head coach. Barry Trotz, of course, in Long Island now. What can fans expect from Todd Reirden? How do you think his style is going to differ from Barry Trotz's, if at all?
Yeah, well, I think one thing that should bode well for the Capitals is, again, that familiarity spent the past 4 years here in Washington. And it'll be interesting to see how it goes from being a top assistant and associate to being the head coach. And what I mean by that is he built some strong relationships in his role as an assistant and associate coach, working primarily with the Blue Liners. A number of Capitals defensemen over the past few years have credited Todd Reirden for bringing out the best in them, for helping them with career years. Matt Niskanen has brought that up, dating back to their days together with the Pittsburgh Penguins. John Carlson's career year last year, he is attributed to some of the work that Todd Reirden did. And Michael Kempney, who the Capitals acquired in late February, you know, he was a healthy scratch with the Chicago Blackhawks midway through last season. He played some of the best hockey of his career late last year, was rewarded with a 4-year extension. He also, unsolicited at the end of the season, referenced that a lot of that had to do with Todd Reirden and the work that he was able to do in communicating with him. So certainly from the Blue Liners over the years, you know, we've seen individual examples. Dmitry Orlov is another one going down the list of guys who've taken their game to the next level. So I wonder now, as he sort of broadens the responsibility and oversees the 22-23-man roster, if that can carry over a little bit. But certainly the communication has been among the praise that we've heard from Todd Reirden over the past few years, his ability to handle players and before each season to sit them down, come up with a game plan, a realistic game plan, goals that they each should have. I don't know if that will now carry over to 22-23 men, but certainly among his strengths over the past few years. And again, someone who's worked with both special teams units here in Washington over the years, penalty kill, the power play, two units which have done well. So, you know, hopefully that can carry over as well.
Ben, you mentioned Philip Grubauer earlier in the interview, and he's obviously a member of the Colorado Avalanche now, and the only other goaltender the Capitals have signed to an NHL contract is Phoenix Copley, and he's only got 2 career NHL games under his belt. Is that a concern at all for you with Braden Holtby? I mean, we know he can play 60 to 65 games a year, but is that a concern now that you don't have a backup goaltender with a lot of NHL experience?
Certainly was a luxury the past few years. Not gonna beat around that bush, especially last year, right, when Holtby admittedly had a little bit of a down year for himself. And, you know, this year the Capitals won't necessarily have that security blanket, at least to that degree, because they did a year ago when Grubauer did a lot of the heavy lifting towards the end of the season. So certainly it was a luxury, one that they were able to take advantage, but you're not wrong. At that point, you think a backup goalie leaving, no big deal. No, it's somewhat of a big deal in these parts, but hopefully from Braden Holtby's sake, he could return to the form that we saw 3-4 years ago, 2015, 2016, even 2017, when he was the Vezina Trophy contender and a winner a few years ago. One of the things he did during those seasons was he played a lot. played north of 70 games, in fact, in 2015. And like most goalies, you know, you won't find too many who say, yeah, I'll take a night off, I'll take a breather. Braden Holtby is one who certainly, over the course of his career, has embraced a heavy workload, a lot of games, feels it gets him into that, those consistent reps, and has produced some good results earlier in his career anyways when he plays a lot of games in volume. So we'll see if that carries over this year, because at that point I would think that Braden Holtby, you know, kind of sink or swim with him. If he's in a little bit of a slump as he was a year ago, I'm not sure that they're necessarily going to have that security blanket. We'll see Phoenix Copley a little bit, but to your point, his NHL experience, very, very limited, only a handful of games a few years ago with St. Louis.
You know, Ben, you talked about how much of this team is returning, but of course, you know, no team makes it through 82 games unscathed, so they often have to rely on their AHL farm teams. Do you have anybody from the Hershey Bears that you could see coming up and making a good impact for the Washington Capitals this season?
Well, he might still be a year away, and interesting we're talking about the goaltenders here. I'll throw out the name Ilya Samsonov, who maybe isn't necessarily a household name, at least to North Americans. He did have some success a few years ago at the World Juniors. The Capitals used a first-round pick on the goaltender in 2015, and this will be his first full season in North America. And maybe, I would imagine, before the end of the season, maybe he makes a cameo appearance at the Capitals. I think the idea is that this year is spent for Ilya Samsonov, though, handling the bulk of the workload with the Hershey Bears. He'll be their undisputed number one. He'll get starters, you know, in terms of work volume. He'll be the starter in Hershey. And he'll be someone that we'll be monitoring throughout the year, because ultimately, without looking too far ahead, could be the Capitals' goaltender of the future. Again, that's looking a little bit ahead. Hope he still has 2 years left on his current contract. But Ilya Samsonov, again, a first-round pick a few years ago in goal. It was maybe a little bit of a head-scratcher when they made the pick at the time, but someone who will certainly be keeping our eyes on in Hershey this year.
Ben Raby is the Washington Capitals radio host. He's one of our favorites. Ben, appreciate the time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us. Happy New Year to you and your family. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Likewise, appreciate it, fellas. Thank you.
Take care, Ben. Thanks again. When we come back, we discuss Darnell Nurse. He's not going to be in Oilers training camp without a contract. How concerned should the Oilers be, and that this might linger in to the start of the regular season? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Camp is still a few weeks away, but would you be prepared to come to camp without a contract?
No, I wouldn't come to camp without a contract, but well, hopefully we get something done before camp so I could be out there first day. That's the goal.
Camp is now less than a week away. Still no contract for Darnell Nurse, Edmonton Oilers defenseman. Much like Josh Morrissey of the Winnipeg Jets, still no contract. No concern in Winnipeg for whatever reason, or minimal concern. Yet, you would begin to wonder, as you get closer and closer to the date, you know, how quickly minimal concern can become maximum concern. Same with Morrissey. Similar maybe with Nurse in Edmonton. Time will tell. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, it's final night in town, Tim Nutt. Two shows, 7:15, 10 p.m. If you're looking for something to do, he's hilarious. I've seen him a number of times. Tim Nutt at Rumors. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com. Darnell Nurse, Josh Morrissey, Shea Theodore. We've mentioned all three of those guys, all young RFA defensemen, all without a contract as we are less than a week away before the start of training camp. How concerned should the Oilers be, Ezzy, about the lack of movement with Nurse? The Oilers are a team that has got more salary cap issues, at least for this coming season, than the Jets do. And there seems to be a little bit of loggerheads between both sides.
Yeah, and you know, when you're talking about Shea Theodore, Darnell Nurse, Josh Morrissey, all drafted in 2013. Shea mm-hmm. Theodore was later in the first round, but Darnell Nurse, he was actually a seventh overall pick. And you can make the argument that at this point, Josh Morrissey is a better defenseman than Darnell Nurse. I'm willing to entertain that. Darnell Nurse is a very good defenseman, though. And I think he had a very underrated year for the Oilers, and that's probably because with the exception of Connor McDavid, Drew, there weren't that many players that were having great seasons on the Oilers. So yeah. I mean, you're talking about a guy who is going to be in your top four for many years to come. Same age as Josh Morrissey. I mean, he's a guy that was playing on the top pair there. And obviously, you know, that was mainly because Oscar Klefbom was struggling last year. And at the very least, Darnell Nurse is your second pairing defenseman. So I don't think there should be a lot of concern right now. But I think if we're here talking about this next week and training camp has already started and Josh Morrissey and Darnell Nurse are still unsigned, then obviously, you know, the concern is going to be a lot higher. But I think for the Oilers, when you're looking at that decor, and we know that Andre Sequeira is not going to be playing at the beginning of the season with that Achilles tendon injury. We talked about it last week, Drew.
Mm-hmm.
You know that as far as Darnell Nurse and Oscar Klefbom, Adam Larson, I mean, Chris Russell, you could throw in there, Matt Benning. I mean, this is going to be your defense next year. So I think it's a question of whether it's going to be a bridge deal or a long-term deal. But similar to Josh Morrissey, guys, I mean, it looks like right now Nurse is probably going to sign the bridge deal, because if he was going to sign the long-term deal, he probably would have done that already.
Well, with the Oilers, the Jets have the room to sign Morrissey to a long-term deal. 4 years, 5 years, 6 years, whatever it might be. With the Oilers, they have just under $4 million of cap space. So he's not going to sign a long-term deal that's for less than $4 million a year. He's not going to sign the deal that Noah Hanifin just got in Calgary. You know, another guy who was an RFA defenseman, you know, who in the same vein as Morrissey and Nurse and Theodore. So the Nurse one, the Oilers are almost forced to offer only a bridge deal. And Nurse is almost forced to only consider a bridge deal because of where they are salary cap wise right now. You know, talking about Nurse, Dave, talking about Morrissey, Theodore, I mean, we're, you know, like I said, a week away from training camp. Are you beginning to wonder why, you know, especially the Morrissey one hasn't gotten done yet? Or is it still no worries up until, say, next Thursday, next Friday, when everybody reports for the medicals?
Yeah, I honestly do, Drew. I mean, the reality is it's not like these guys have to stop talking because there's a requirement to stop talking at 5 o'clock on a Thursday. They can talk until they can continue talking after the training camp begins. But the reality is that you want to obviously have them signed and get that done with. So my suspicion is that the Jets will have this done. I mean, the truth is, obviously, we're just sitting there going, I suspect the money is determined. It's really just a fight between term, between the two sides. I mean, if you're Morrissey, you're more likely looking for a bridge deal. And if you're the team, you're probably trying to lock them up because you know this player is only going to get better. So you probably want a lengthier deal. But I think if you're Josh Morrissey and you know you may not be getting power play time, that may dampen down your numbers a little bit. You're saying to yourself, well, maybe I'll take a bridge. And then when some of the guys, i.e. Dustin Byfuglien, Jacob Trouba, you never know who's going to be, you know, Tyler Myers. You don't know who will be with the Jets when that next contract comes around to be renegotiated. Perhaps Josh Morrissey gets a more advanced role at the end of his, let's say, two-year bridge deal. And now Josh Morrissey's put up some more points on the power play that he wasn't getting before.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what? Now Josh Morrissey, a top-pairing shutdown defenseman and getting points on the power play, that's a pretty good contract for his next contract, as opposed to what he might be getting right now because he hasn't been getting those opportunities.
Ezzie, with the Nurse situation, I mean, we know we talked about last week, like you said, about Sequeira being out of the Oilers lineup indefinitely with the injury. Does Nurse see that as an opportunity to get some leverage, to get some additional leverage? I mean, it's not like he's really done anything to warrant a massive contract. He's been a very, you know, it's taken him time to become an NHL regular, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just the reality of the situation. The team's got just under $4 million of cap space. Is he saying, you know, why do I necessarily have to do you guys a favor and lose some of my, you know, give up some money when you're really up against it with Sequeira now being injured?
Right, and I'm sure that's what his agent is arguing, right? He's saying, well, you know, he had a career year with 26 points,
mm-hmm.
but he's only 23 years old, and this is similar to Josh Morrissey. We talked about it. They're the same age. They were drafted the same year. I mean, when you're talking about Nurse and Morrissey, I think, you know, you're arguing that your upside is 45 to 50 points. Now, whether or not these defensemen get to 45 or 50 points, that remains to be seen, but at the very least, you could make a strong argument that your offensive numbers are going to increase year after year. I mean, when you're talking about 23-year-old defensemen,
yeah,
I mean, their best years are the stats show that the best years are to come, right? For a defenseman, your prime is, you know, somewhere probably between 25 and 28 years old, 25 and 29 years old, right? So, I mean, I think this is a tricky one when you're talking about Nurse and Morrissey and before that, Noah Hanifin. These aren't elite offensive defensemen, but they're elite defensemen whose best offensive numbers are probably yet to come. So I think I agree with Dave. I think Nurse is going to get signed in the next week here. I think Morrissey's going to get signed here in the next week. But I think you could make a strong argument that he's fairly close to Noah Hanifin, and he could be, you know, somewhere between $4.5 and $5 million a year AAV on a long-term deal.
Which the Oilers can't afford, right, with their salary cap situation being the way it is. Darren Dreger was on TSN 1260 in Edmonton on Thursday talking with Dustin Nielsen about the Nurse contract situation.
Yeah, I'd be real surprised if they don't get a bridge deal in order here. And obviously there's been an ongoing back and forth between the Edmonton Oilers and Darnell Nurse's people. And, you know, as you guys have openly speculated, you know, 2 years seems like the right fit in the moment. I'd be surprised, Dusty, if he gets more than $3 million. I know that there's been, again, some hint that maybe it's slightly more than $3 million. I think the Oilers, frankly, are pretty firm on $3 million. And this is an opportunity for Darnell Nurse, too. The bridge deal often works in the favor of the player. I think that, you know, the Oilers are absolutely committed to the notion that Darnell Nurse is miles away from his full potential. So whatever his next deal is after this bridge deal is going to be a good one. It's going to be a big one because they believe in him. So I think it's just, I wouldn't call it formality because you know how these negotiations go. But as I said, I'd be surprised if they don't get something done relatively soon.
That's Darren Dreger on with TSN 1260's Dustin Nielsen talking about this. Much like Morrissey, much like Shea Theodore, much like Darnell Nurse, we'll keep you abreast of all the latest, especially with Morrissey, as we're about 6 days away from the start of Winnipeg Jets training camp. When we come back, Bernie Nichols is going to join us. We'll talk to Bernie about his legendary NHL career. As we mentioned, one of only eight players to ever record 70 goals in a season. We talk with Bernie Nichols up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number three. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website with latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome to the program former NHL player Bernie Nichols. Bernie, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Morning. How you guys doing?
Doing very well, Bernie. How about yourself?
All good.
That's great. We appreciate you joining us. You were recently in Winnipeg. I hope you enjoyed your hospitality in town here while you were visiting.
Always.
That's good.
Yes. I've done different. I did golf outing for Brian Trottier there, and then I did one for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, and I do a hockey thing in the wintertime, so I always enjoy going to Winnipeg.
Well, we appreciate you coming to visit us in our small little town here. Bernie, it's sort of funny. We're on air, and we're watching TSN on one of the TVs here in studio, and they are showing, actually, highlights from the 1981-82 playoff series of your Los Angeles Kings against the Edmonton Oilers. You were interviewed on TV while we're watching you here in studio. So the world's colliding, that sort of thing. Just wanted to take you back. You were a rookie entering the NHL that season. You're up against what turned out very quickly to be a juggernaut Edmonton Oilers team. What was it like being involved in that comeback, the miracle on Manchester, when you guys come back to stun the Edmonton Oilers in that playoff series?
Yeah, I remember that like it was yesterday. It's my first year, and you're playing against the great one, and as good a team as Edmonton always had. Like, we had no business beating them. As you can tell, they went on a couple years later, went four Stanley Cups in 5 years. So, but the funny thing about that is we're down 5-0 going in the third, halfway through the third. Gary Unger takes a 5-minute major. We end up scoring a couple goals. And then, you know, we get one a little later, and then we pull our goalie, and we score two more, and then finally win it in overtime. But the funny thing is, the owner, back then, the owner used to sit right between the benches. He'd have his entourage there and, you know, come out the third period. He's gone home. It's empty, you know. And then what else happened is we end up winning that game. They had no, you know, they thought we had no chance of winning. We didn't have a ride to Edmonton for game 5. So we had to fly back with the Oilers in the same plane. So they get on the plane first, and then we get on second. I think they did that because I think if they get off through and got through customs before we did, then they'd probably hold us up there half the night. So it worked out great. We went into game five, and probably the easiest game against them. We beat them like 8-4, 8-5 or something like that. It was unbelievable.
Bernie, you're obviously very well known for being one of the best goal scorers in NHL history. You had 475 career NHL goals, and then obviously the 70-goal season in 1988-89 with the Los Angeles Kings. But I wanted to ask you about a game against the Quebec Nordiques back in 1984, and I know that you've talked about this many times since your NHL career ended, but can you take us back to that four-goal game? And for those people who aren't familiar with it, you scored a goal in every single period, including overtime.
That's right. Obviously, that's something that can't be beat, right? That's a record that even the great one won't have that. But it was tied. Fedorov did it, but it was, I remember it. It was, I scored the overtime goal, obviously, but I had a 5-on-3 goal. It was just, it was obviously a great night. You know, that was my first 4-goal game ever in the NHL. And I can remember it like it was yesterday as well. It's something that, you know, you're excited to be able to score 4 goals in the NHL and to do it like that, a goal in each period, what's never been done. So obviously that's pretty special too.
You know, Bernie, you were always a prolific goal scorer, but as you just said, in 88-89, your goal scoring went up to 70 at that point. Now, of course, there was an addition of a little-known player named Wayne Gretzky to your team. What was it like getting an opportunity to play with Wayne Gretzky?
Well, you know what? I said this different times, and it's hard to explain, but, you know, it's like being a kid. I say this, and I mean it. It's like a kid on Christmas morning, you know? Every day was so exciting, and a lot of people don't know this, and I hung out with Wayne every day. And I've asked different guys from Edmonton if Gretz had, you know, one or two guys that, you know, was kind of his go-to guys up there, and it wasn't necessarily true. But for me, every day after practice, Bern, let's go to lunch. Every road trip, Gretz and I went out to dinner. It was like, you know, and for me, obviously being able to spend a year with Wayne like that, it was unbelievable. And, you know, Wayne wasn't a vocal leader, but I remember Wayne would come over to me and just privately, just give me a little tap on the knee pads. You know, he says, hey, we need you tonight, right? And in your mind, you're going, oh, my friggin' God. You know, that's Gretz. You know what I mean? He needs me tonight, right? And so that's kind of the feeling you had. And, you know, great players bring the best of everybody, and that's the same in every sport. And I think, you know, as players, you never want to let the great ones down, and that's kind of maybe the mindset I had. But it's like, but you know, playing with them, you know, we're both centermen, so we were on different lines. But the great thing about Wayne is, and I've never seen this before, is no matter who comes off the ice on the line going out or coming off for Wayne, he would take first guy. So if it was my left winger, right winger, Gretz would come out. So as a centerman, I'm staying out there as long as I can, right? Because I know first guy over the bench is Gretz. So I'm going to have a chance to play with him. So, but then I killed penalties with him. I had 8 shorthanded goals, played the power play with him. And, you know, I don't know how many power play goals I had, but I'm pretty sure I had a few. So, you know, just playing with him, it was really special. And, you know, I think anybody could identify with that, just having the opportunity to play with Wayne. I tell people all the time, like, I got to play with him a year and a half. I couldn't imagine what it'd be like to play with Wayne for 10 years.
Bernie Nichols is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, talking about his legendary NHL career. You know, you mentioned the off-ice bond you had with Wayne Gretzky in the previous answer. Why do you think you had that connection? I mean, you yourself said it was rare. What about your personality, what about Wayne's personality, meshed so well that you got to spend the amount of time you did with him on the ice, of course, and more importantly, off the ice?
Yeah, like I say, I don't know why. You know, why he picked me, thank God he did. You know, for me, it was awesome. I tell people jokingly, but I kind of mean it. Like, I'll never forget after practice, we had a McDonald's 200 yards from our practice rink. And, you know, Gretz says, Bern, let's go to lunch. All right. We go to McDonald's. Gretz love McDonald's, right? I can't stand McDonald's anymore, you know? And I feel bad, but it's true. Like, he loved McDonald's. We go to McDonald's. All right. He says we're going. I don't care where we're going, right? Gretz says we're going. We're going. So, but, yeah, I don't know why. Like I said, I'm happy it was me. But for me, it was just absolutely amazing. So I'm like I said, I'm happy he picked me to hang with. So, for whatever reason, I don't know, but sure excited about it.
Bernie, Patrick Laine is obviously one of the best goal scorers in the league already, and he's only 20 years old. He scored 44 goals last year, and he's well on his way to scoring 50. So I'm not going to ask you whether or not you think that Patrick Laine can get to 70 goals, because obviously that's a very exclusive club. But when you watch Patrick Laine, and obviously he's got the great shot, but as a former 70-goal scorer and a guy that had 475 career NHL goals, I mean, what do you see when you watch Patrick Laine and just how special of a player he is?
Special, you know, that's an understatement. That kid shoots the puck. And there's no, if I could shoot the puck like Laine could, I would have scored 100 that year. I can't believe it. You know what he reminds you of, though? Like, you know, Brett Hull. You know, like you always say about Brett, right? Like, Brett just kind of cruises into the offensive zone, and you know, you find those quiet spots, and you see all great goal scorers can do that, and he does that as good as anybody. He's just, you know, he works his way around the offensive zone. He picks a spot. Obviously, you need a good centerman to get in the puck, but he has that, and his release, like he shoots the puck so hard, like, and you know, as an offensive player, as a goal scorer, you're just envious of how quick his release is, how hard he shoots the puck, like, and it's effortless, you know? Like, I know goalies are better now than they were when we played, but he'll score 50, no doubt about it. This kid is too good of a goal scorer not to. So, and you know, as an offensive player, I root for people to do great, so there's no one would like to see him score 50 goals more than me. So I hope he does it, and I know he will. For sure he will.
So, Bernie, you started in 79-80 with the Kingston Canadiens, and you ended your career in 98-99 with the San Jose Sharks. What was it like when you finally called it a career in pro hockey?
Well, mine was kind of different because I don't think I was quite ready yet. I know what happened was I made an agreement with the Sharks that that I would, you know, after, and Patrick Marleau just got drafted there, and the idea was I was the number one guy even at, you know, 37, 38. But then when Patrick came along, he would take over, and then I would play that, you know, that leadership role for the kids, and I would, you know, I wanted to do that. And what happened was Daryl Sutter was the coach, and well, we had Ronnie Sutter there playing that fourth line role, and you know, and it's no disrespect to Daryl, I'd probably do the same thing, right? I'm going to take my brother over anybody, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And Daryl did that, but my problem was with the general manager at the time, Dean Lombardi. You know, Dean and I had an agreement, and I was the better person for the job. And you know, it was up to Dean to tell Daryl, said no, because we already had this arrangement. You know, this is the way it was going to be. That's why he signed there. And so when that didn't happen, Dean didn't do what was best for the team. He let Daryl decide. So then I was out. And that was kind of disappointing because I really wasn't ready for that yet. And I still felt that I could play that role and do it well because I love working with kids, love helping them out. And so when that was taken away from me, it was disappointing.
Couple more questions for you, Bernie. Bernie Nichols joins us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I believe you reside in Vegas, or at least you spent some time in Vegas. You know, having been there, what do you think of the Vegas Golden Knights and the atmosphere and Vegas as a hockey town?
Well, the atmosphere is second to none, to be honest with you. And obviously what they've done, I don't quite think they will do it again anytime soon. But, I mean, what they did first year was, to me, and I tell people, the fans, no fans deserve what happened this year, right? Like, you know, look at Winnipeg. I was in L.A. for years. Teams, franchises go years without even seeing the Cup, you know, even making the playoffs at times. You know, and these guys first year go to the finals. Like, these fans are going to be spoiled. They're going to expect that every year, and obviously that's not fair to the players. But the atmosphere was great. The city embraced it. I don't know if you guys remember opening night with the first responders, what mm-hmm. they did that. Like, there wasn't a dry eye in the house. My wife was there. I wasn't there. I watched it on TV like a lot of people. It was, like, unbelievable. So, you know, but like I always say, I don't care, like, and obviously from being from Canada, we could, you know, you could probably have two teams in Winnipeg. You could probably have three teams in Toronto because the Canadians will support it. To me, I don't care where they put an NHL team as long as they support it. And that's why it gets frustrating sometimes when you want more teams in Canada, because we know we will support them there. But they came here. The city's embraced it. They're sold out for about three straight years. So as long as they support it, I'm happy for them. And that's all you really want.
You know, Bernie, our show's called the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, so we have to ask you, how's your old buddy Marty McSorley doing?
Yeah. You know what? Marty's doing great. He always will. You know, I think people think that might have cost them the series. They weren't beating Montreal anyways. They could have went up. Even if they won that game, they would have. I still think Montreal would have won. But, I mean, it was devastating for the LA Kings fans. I know it was hard on Marty and his teammates. But you know, Marty, he's going to respond, and he's done really well for himself.
Bernie Nichols, a legendary NHL goal scorer, one of only eight players to score 70 goals in one season. Bernie, thanks so much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Great having you on. Great walk down memory lane with you.
I appreciate it, guys. Anytime. Always enjoy talking with you guys, and always enjoy talking hockey, obviously. So I appreciate the time.
Take care, Bernie. Thanks very much. When we come back, okay. Kalen Qualley is going to join us. He's the founder of the Pass It Forward equipment, hockey equipment drive. It's back up and running right now. We'll talk to Kalen up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment, Saturday morning. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're all about good causes here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and one of the best causes and one of the causes we've been happy to promote and support for, oh gosh, a lot of years now, is the Pass It Forward Hockey Equipment Program. We're pleased to welcome founder of that charitable event, Kalen Qualley, back to the program. Kalen, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
Hey, good morning, guys. I can't tell you how excited I am to be back promoting this program again. And you guys have always been ardent supporters, so I appreciate it once again.
It's been a while. How many years now has the Pass It Forward program been going on for, Kalen?
This would be the 10th year.
Wow.
So 2009 was the first year that we went out to Winnipeggers, said, here's an opportunity for you to donate your gently used hockey equipment, and with the help of Pass It Forward and partners, give more kids a chance to play hockey.
So for anybody who's brand new to the program, who this is the first they're hearing about it, what is the program all about? How do they get involved? How do they donate? You know, give sort of the 311, the information about the program.
You got it, Drew. So as I just mentioned, so Pass It Forward is about collecting used hockey equipment and redistributing it in Winnipeg to give more kids the chance to play hockey. We're talking about kids who otherwise can't afford it, because as a lot of hockey parents know, one of the biggest barriers to participating in the sport of hockey is the cost of hockey equipment. So it's been going on for about a week now. So it started September 4th until September 22nd. You have two more weeks. You can donate your gently used gear at any Perth's dry cleaners in Winnipeg.
Kalen, we want to get into your trip to Europe in a second, but to get back to Pass It Forward, I mean, if I follow Kalen on Instagram, you know, it looked like he had a nice little trip. But, you know, you mentioned that the program started about a week ago. When you're talking about gently used equipment, is there any type of equipment that is needed more than any other equipment, or is it all the same as far as, you know, skate, shoulder pads, elbow pads, sticks, anything like that? Is there something maybe that you're looking for more than something else?
Yeah, you know what? It's a good question. To be honest, like it's all needed. It's all required to participate. So skates, shoulder pads, gloves. I mentioned gently used, so that's just in reference to don't give us gloves without palms or stuff that you know is not going to be able to be used, because the whole objective of the program is to pass on the equipment so that someone else can use it. But quite frankly, any size of equipment. For the hockey parents out there, they're more likely to have the youth size stuff that their kids have grown out of. And, you know, maybe there's some rec league players who wanted to make a bit of an upgrade. You know, that adult size stuff, there's a lot of 14-year-olds out there that are bigger than you and I, so they can use that as well.
And Kalen, earlier you mentioned Pass It Forward has existed for 10 years, and I remember when you started it when we were both students at Red River College. Are you able to say, you know, how many kids have been able to benefit from this program over the years?
Yeah, I wouldn't have a firm number, but I have one I'm pretty confident in. I would say over 400 full sets of equipment have been collected and passed on because of Pass It Forward.
That's amazing.
So, Kalen, what kind of growth have you seen? I mean, like you said, it started 10 years ago, but obviously at that point, you know, it was a new kind of foundation. Now you've been 10 years in. How has it changed? And again, has it grown?
I can say, and almost surprisingly, that it's been consistent in that there's just resounding response every year. Like this is clearly something that so many people in Winnipeg relate to. And in our last collection period, some of the exact figures were pretty astounding. Like we had 58, I was looking at this morning, we had 58 pairs of gloves. These are like usable gloves that have been passed on and are now being used. Something like 63 pairs of skates, pretty relative numbers for pants and shoulder pads. So, I mean, if we outfitted over 50 kids last time and we're 10 years in, you know, this is something that continues to be very prevalent.
Kalen Qualley, founder of the Pass It Forward Hockey Equipment Program, joining us on the program. Again, if you have any equipment that you're looking to donate, it can be dropped off at any Perth's Dry Cleaners location throughout the month of September for another couple weeks, so get on it right away. We've talked a lot about the donating of the equipment. How does the distribution of the equipment work, Kalen?
Yeah, that's a great question, Drew. So the program's partner is the True North Foundation's Hockey Academy program. And I can't say enough wonderful things about this program, which has, you know, you asked about how have I seen growth related to Pass It Forward. Well, the Hockey Academy, since it started in the first year of the Winnipeg Jets, has grown to support nearly 800 school-aged kids. Of course, their equipment isn't only supported by Pass It Forward, but that's who makes sure that the equipment that we collect gets passed on and used. So the Hockey Academy program, it partners with elementary schools, high schools in, you know, socially or economically challenged areas of the city. So this truly is a program that helps kids who otherwise wouldn't get a chance to play participate in hockey.
Kalen Qualley is the founder of the Pass It Forward Hockey Equipment Program. Kalen, for people who want more information, where do they best get that?
PassItForward.ca. And continue to listen to TSN 1290, Virgin 103, and Bob 99. They're program partners, and they'll continue reminding you to bring your gently used equipment to Perth's Dry Cleaners this month.
Wonderful. Kalen, all the best on this. Congratulations again. It's been, like you said, 10 years. It's an incredible accomplishment. Keep up the good work, brother.
Appreciate the support, guys. Take care.
Take care, Kalen. Our good friend Kalen Qualley, founder of the Pass It Forward Equipment Program, on this Saturday morning. You still got 2 weeks to drop off your gently used equipment at any Perth's Dry Cleaners. Gentlemen, next Saturday, like I said, we're going to be down at the Iceplex for the Jets Fan Festival. Looking forward to that. If you're out there and about, looking forward to come see us, come say hi. Probably not when we're right on air, but you know, when
it happens,
have our,
though.
It happens.
Sometimes
often,
people
yeah.
will talk to us.
Yeah, when we take our headphones off, that's a better opportunity to talk to us than when we're speaking on air. That's it for this Saturday morning on the program. Big thank you to everybody who joined us. Kaylin, Qualley, Bernie Nichols, Ben Raby, Dave McCarthy, and Jason Bell. In case you missed any of the program, it's available on our website, illegalcurve.com, and wherever you get your podcast, subscribe, get it sent to your device each and every week. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support them because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big props to producer James doing a great job behind the board. For Dave Minuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Stay tuned for Olympic Building Center Blue and Gold Game Day here on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.